Eier du din egen bedrift? Da betalingsløsningen fra SumUp det du har drømt om. Hold styr på alt fra ordrer, betalinger og kvitteringer, til refusjoner, salgstall og produktkataloger. SumUp gir deg kontroll på alt på ett og samme sted. Kjøp SumUp og selv kjøp.
Velkommen til Biohacking Girls podcast, der vitenskap møter livsstil, og der vi tar kontroll over vår egen helse.
Vi dykker ned I teknologi, ernæring, trening og mentale hacks for å styrke kropp og sinn. Det handler om å bruke naturens prinsipper for å finne balanse, energi og glede.
Vi tester, utforsker og lever som vi lærer, alt for å inspirere deg til å finne din vei til et balansert og godt liv.
For det alle kan få dette til, og sammen kan vi gjøre kunnskap til praksis og skape varig forandring. Du klar for å ta steget inn I fremtiden? La oss hacke livet sammen. Today's guest is someone who has helped thousands of women around the world better understand their hormones, energy, metabolism, and overall well-being. And I actually met her in Miami last year.
Lucky you. Did you talk to her?
Yes.
So that's why we are going to have Dr. Anna Kabecka, who is a triple board certified OBGYN. Functional medicine expert and a leading voice in menopause, longevity, and also women's health. But what makes her so special is the way she combines deep medical knowledge with a more holistic and human approach to healing.
Yes, and after more than 30 years working with women, she believes menopause is not something to fear, but a powerful transition that we women can move through with strength, vitality, and confidence.
Many know her as the girlfriend doctor. I just love that name because she talks about topics women often feel uncomfortable discussing, like hormones, sexuality, aging, stress, energy, and emotions, in a way that makes honest, warm, and empowering.
She's also the author of several best-selling books, including The Hormone Fix, Menopause, and Keto Green, and she's passionate about helping women get to the root causes instead of just masking symptoms.
So today we'll talk about hormones, menopause, longevity, the nervous system, bioidentical hormones, metabolism, performance, and what it truly means to thrive as a woman in today's world.
We are super excited to welcome Anna Kabecka. Biohacking girls, taking the lead, the
future is bright, and the plant in the seed. Dr. Anna, welcome to our podcast. We are so honored to have you as a guest. We have been wanted to have you on for a long time, and we can't wait for this conversation. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. I wish we were doing it in person. Norway is on my bucket list. So,
yeah, then we'll see you when you come here.
Yes, we have to invite you.
Yes, I would love to.
So I was in Miami last year and I heard you speak and I was thrilled. And I said to Aletta, we need to get you on the show. So where should we start? I've read all your books. I've tried your products. So why don't we just go back to the beginning when you got sick and your story so our listeners can get to know you a little bit?
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, you know, they say and when we do what we do, it's because our mess becomes our message. And that is true with me. So, you know, I trained at Emory University as an OBGYN. And then I went into private practice as a National Health Service Corps scholar in rural Georgia. So I was, you know, solo physician, hung a shingle, had my practice. And I saw very interesting and complicated patients that didn't have access to, you know, physicians. But then, and so I really started digging into bioidentical hormones, understanding functional medicine from early, you know, 1999 and early 2000s, really digging into that for my patients. And then in 2006, after a personal tragedy, we lost, I was diagnosed with infertility and then early menopause and was told I would never be able to have another child again. And that was devastation on devastation to be just in my 30s at 39 years old, just 39 years old, and experience that loss and that continued loss, right? When if anyone listening has been through infertility work, every time you do the highest doses of injectable medications or fertility treatments, and every time you have a negative pregnancy test, it's loss again and again and again. It's traumatizing. So I took a sabbatical from my medical practice because you're 39 years old, you're OBGYN, you're in fully academic medicine, and you're giving a diagnosis of early menopause and premature ovarian failure is what we called it at the time. Premature ovarian insufficiency is not a better name, but we still have those names. And that diagnosis of early menopause, you're like, okay, well, that's it. I have to resign to the fact that I'm not fertile anymore. And as a result of this sabbatical that I took and a journey around the world and meeting serendipitously with healers from Native American shaman to an Andean philosopher to an Indonesian healer and to some of the most amazing people and physicians in the world, with the grace of God, I will have to say with the grace of God, reversed early menopause and naturally conceived the child I was told I would never be able to have at 41 years old. And so it was like when I came back into medical practice pregnant, I was on fire to help my patients do the same thing and tell them your diagnosis is not your destiny, right? Like there's always a healthier tomorrow. We just have to make the right choices today.
Thank you so much for sharing. This is, I'm sorry you had to go through all that, but good for us because then you turn into the person you are today.
Yeah.
And yeah. You have been working with women now for over 30 years. And what is the thing that women are deeply missing when it comes to the hormones, the aging, and to feel truly well?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And I think about it a lot, especially as I'm 60 years old this year and my daughter just, graduated high school. And so it's this whole different kind of shift and ability to reflect what I wish I knew then, right? Like every year I say that. What I wish I knew then, what do I wish I know now that will help my 60, 70-year-old, 80-year-old, now I can't say 60 anymore since I'm 60. So 70-year-old, 80-year-old self. And I think it's such a good question because we think, we are advancing in so many ways in medicine, but yet we're often held backwards. And first, it's understanding that menopause is the timeline introducing us into the second spring of our life, right? It is that transformation. We go from being the caterpillar, just trudging along into the butterfly. Should we embrace, should we accept the challenge? Again, not without its challenges, but should we accept the challenge? And what I've learned being in this hormone space for so long is that it takes more than hormones to fix our hormones. It's so true. It's these things that you guys have been teaching and talking about on your podcast and your social media. It's these little tools like the biohacking. What are the basics? What's the foundation? Are we getting outside? Are we having good friendships and relationships? Are we working with Mother Nature or against her? Like, I think that for me is so important. Yes, definitely bioidentical hormones, definitely nutrition and supplements. Nutrition and lifestyle is huge. And I don't know if in Norway or in Spain, if actually you have any blue zones or what the characteristics are of your centenarians, your oldest living population. I'm curious to hear it because I've studied this around the world myself and specifically women, who have lived over 100, like what are the characteristics? Mm-hmm. And from the research, that I found and that has been done, it's always connection, community, healthy marriage, getting out in nature, doing a job you love, a healthy sense of self, like they say, self-narcissism. I love myself. Of course they love me. I'm lovable, right? It's that concept, like, of course they love me. Of course they want to be around me. Look at me, right? It's that healthy sense of self, that positivity, and a strong faith-based practice. So I think we miss that because we're trying, we're like, oh, I'm gonna biohack this. I'm going to, you know, let me see what's the latest in like the peptide stacks. Believe me, I my pendulum swings a lot sometimes, but like it comes down to those things. Am I enjoying my life? Do I love being around the people I love? Do they love being around me? Am I having fun? That's the missing piece. I promise you, that is the missing piece.
I think so too. And just to answer your question, there are some blue zones, at least in Spain. And I think a lot has to do with the community feeling, the family appreciation of having somebody around you, and also light, outdoor, local food. So there's so much to dig into. But in Norway, we lack sunlight half the year. So we're not actually a blue zone there.
But still, we live a long time in Norway. We get old here. So something we're doing right, I think. Yeah.
Do you think, like, as far as chemical exposure, and from what I think of, when I think of Norwegians, tell me if I'm biased, but you're outside, you're in nature, even though it's light, it's dark, it's cold, it's you're in nature.
Yeah, you're right. We do try to get out, and we're sporty, and we embrace all the seasons, absolutely. So I think that helps. Yeah.
I think that's huge. And I think the difference here is we've been accustomed in the US anyway, what I see with a lot of my patients as well, is we go from a 70 degree climate controlled home to a 70 degree climate controlled car to maybe a 70 degree climate controlled gym because we're working out, right? To office, to back home, you know, and it's all climate controlled. And then we're in front of these blue lights and environmental, we're not with nature. And that works against us. Mm-hmm.
And I think so. And if we go a little bit back to your infertility story, because I think a lot of our listeners would like to learn a little bit more how you healed yourself in a way, just, I mean, physically, but mentally, emotionally, hormonally. What are some of the strategies?
And also, how did you live in your 30s compared to now?
Yeah. So in my 30s, I was running my own business. I had a medical practice with two offices and a medical spa. I was the sole provider for my family, trying to raise kids and work and a team of 15 employees. And delivering babies and all of that good stuff, you know, as an OBGYN and doing surgeries. So yeah, I was burning the candle at both ends for sure. For sure I was. And yet, you know, and just trudging through, I was definitely inflamed, approaching pre-diabetes, as with my family genetic history. All of that was part of it, you know, getting up to go to work at 5 a.m., unless I was up already for a delivery, you know, having a cup of coffee, you know, coffee and coffee and coffee throughout the day. I mean, my adrenals were really, really challenged too at that time. And yet, you know, you power through, you think you're doing everything right, you're being healthy. And yet there's one struggle, you know, struggle with weight, struggle with hair loss, struggle with, you know, these other pieces, but yet, you know, doing better and learning and understanding, because I was trained in functional medicine. I was trained in hormonal therapies. And yet, yeah, that was, and then the trauma piece was really the devastating piece. And we really, if we look at PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder, I like to say I have post-traumatic growth versus PTSD. And if we look at the effect of every chronic everyday stress on our physiology, it is, and you know, it contributes to infertility without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt, it contributes to infertility. A body has to feel safe and be healthy in order to conceive.
Yes, that's the fight or flight survival. So what did you actually do? What changes did you do in your life? Like, everything from estrogen dominance, plastics, or glyphosates, or stress management.
Yeah. So at that time, it was even before I created my Keto Green method, right? It was before I created really my work with intermittent fasting and the alkalinizing vegetables and was really big on whole foods, et cetera. But now as I was traveling, because I took a year sabbatical, so I really have had many, many insights into the processing of what healed the HPA axis, right? And so on this traveling, number one, meeting people, not feeling alone, that was really important. The second piece, we ate healthy outside of the US. I mean, inside the US, it was, you know, organic milk and cereal for breakfast for the kids. And, you know, I tried to avoid dairy, but I love cheese. And, but when you travel, like that, you're not getting a lot of these, you know, unhealthy options. And it was interesting because you didn't drink milk outside of, I mean, that wasn't something we drank. I can't even think of any country, maybe other than France that we went to that actually served milk. But, you know, we started in Asia and Australia and New Zealand and South America, but milk wasn't part of our diet. It was interesting because one of my daughters who was 7 at the time, and she had a lot of sinus infections. When she stopped the dairy, she didn't have any. When we came back a year later, within 2 weeks, she had a sinus infection. And, you know, these are things back in 2006, 2007, I was just starting to connect the dots with. And for myself as well, I've had to cut out dairy completely since, you know, really for now, almost 20 years. I mean, I really had to cut out dairy because that was a piece that was keeping my body inflamed and sick. So learning about the different dietary, witnessing the foods we read and understanding the medicinal foods, because in Peru, I was introduced to maca. So when they say, if you're tired, drink maca. If you're infertile, drink maca. And it's the Peruvian Viagra. Like, that's what they call it. I'm like, okay, give me some maca, right? Like, I'm going to have this. And then I looked at the science, the biochemical makeup of it. And it has specific proteins that are unique to Peruvian maca. And it's rich in arginine, which of course increases nitric oxide, which increases blood flow, which is how Viagra works. So I started to pay attention to the medicinal foods, the traditional wisdom. Everywhere I went, I learned about these different ones and I started compiling them together so it tastes good, because that's important for me. From a family of chefs and gourmands, I had to make things taste good. I'm not of the, at least till date, I'm not of the mindset that it, you know, just chug it down because it's good for you. I'm like, no, it's got to taste good, especially if we're going to do it every day. So we started learning about these medicinal foods and paying attention to other cultures and how they were moving and living and, you know, smiling and, you know, enjoying life and community, especially in the older and in the older population.
But did you also measure some of your levels of hormones at that time? And did you have an ovulation? Did you check these things back then also?
So when I was 39, diagnosed with infertility and early menopause after seeing my reproductive endocrinologist, one of the best in our region, and tested for everything. All my hormones were tested. I mean, I too knew what to look for. Back then, we weren't testing AMH. So I don't have an AMH from back then, but I have my FSH, LH, estradiol, you know, and my ovaries on ultrasound were literally shriveled up like almonds. They were the size of a shriveled up almond and, you know, and undetectable. But I will tell you this part of the journey is, again, I was post-traumatic. I had post-traumatic stress and significant amount of stress and trauma and grief at that time. And so, but on our journey, when we went to Indonesia, I met one of these, this Indonesian healer. And I think he must have been the same guy that was in Eat, Pray, Love. I read that book much later, but I was like, oh, I bet you that was him. And, you know, we went as a family to sit in his outside pagoda and talk with him. And he said, he looked at me and he said, I said, I'm infertile. He says, you're not. And I said, well, I've seen my ovaries. And he put his hand on the top of my head And it was really tender. So listeners can do that right now. Put your hand on the top of your head. And I'm like, oh, I'm, you know, a Western trained physician. I don't know what that means. Is that like a tumor? Is that something going on? Is there? And it was just so tender. And it was, I mean, extremely tender. And I said, well, what does that mean? And he says, you worry too much. Your ovaries are fine.
Oh.
And 2 months later, I was pregnant.
Wow.
So do you think...
never take away hope.
Exactly. That was my point. The belief that you have belief and faith and that things are going to change.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Because I'd failed 6 rounds of the highest injectable doses of infertility meds with 0 ovarian response. Wow. 0. Yeah.
So what does this tell us, actually, the psychological part of it, the stress, that the traumas that we carry? And sometimes we don't even know. It's not everybody who have like an obvious trauma that you have with your loss, but many people go through life and they have smaller traumas, but they're as significant as the bigger ones.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it is this whole connection piece between cortisol and oxytocin. Yeah. I will tell you this because I learned this and I studied this through my own experience and trying to figure out how I became so disconnected and really broken, burnt out physiologically, even after I gave birth to Ava. Like, I think I lived on her adrenal glands, but you know, and then I was still like the PTSD was still under the surface, back in clinic, working, you know, sole provider. And then that underlying trauma was still there because I was living in the house where our accident happened. I was living in the environment where, you know, where my son died. And it was that underlying, but you're like, I can power through, right? We're so good as women. Like, I'm going to make everyone healthy around me, right? I'm going to keep going. And then I just continued that fear. I mean, you know, that fear is, you know, are my children still okay? Where are they now? You know, the hypervigilance, all of the signs of post-traumatic stress that were still coming up in me without even realizing it. Until I did, right? Until after the divorce, until after my burnout from my medical practice, until after those things happened, I was like, what happened? I don't get it. I loved my work, but I didn't feel love for it. I loved my husband. I didn't feel love for him. Like that disconnect. And that's when cortisol wins and oxytocin loses. Mm. That's the physiology of burnout, of divorce, of, you know, broken heart syndrome. This is so important to understand because oxytocin, as we learn from the blue zones and the things that bring us healing, it's increasing oxytocin in our life, this hormone of love, connection, bonding, this, you know, immune supportive hormone, regenerative hormone. It has so many amazing benefits. So when we prioritize oxytocin, then everything else really starts to fall into place and heal. But that was cortisol was winning. And that was what I experienced physiologically. And then went to the research to understand adverse childhood experiences, post-traumatic stress disorder, chronic everyday stress, and how that affects our HPA axis. We talk about the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal, but also the hypothalamic pituitary thyroid adrenal gonadal axis. It's really the gonads, whether it's the ovaries in women or testes in men, are all part of this hormonal cascade in so many ways. And that when you're in that high cortisol, that high adrenaline, that high fear, high stress state, you are depleting, you're suppressing your reproductive hormones. So what I learned as part of that journey too is like my ovaries weren't dead, right? My adrenals weren't dead. They were suppressed, right? They were suppressed. They're not fatigued. They're not, you know, damaged in any way. They were suppressed. And, you know, it's a survival mechanism. So hence why working and being in nature is so important.
Eier du din egen bedrift? Da betalingsløsningen fra SumUp det du har drømt om. Hold styr på alt fra ordrer, betalinger og kvitteringer til refusjoner, salgstall og produktkataloger. SumUp gir deg kontroll på alt på ett og samme sted. Kjøp SumUp og selvkjøp.
I've actually been using your example when you taught me this last year about that connection between cortisol and the stealing of the oxytocin. And the thing is that we tend to focus so much on the negativity, like the stress, the cortisol, instead of increasing the levels of oxytocin. So we have to talk a little bit more about that. How can we increase that?
Yes, well, I think it's so important because you hear that 90% of all patients' visits to a doctor's office are due to a stress-related complaint, right? Like 90% of all people coming into a doctor's office are, you know, there's some underlying stress physiology. So what has been physicians telling these patients? Well, you have to manage your stress better. Stress management techniques. And I don't know about y'all, but you probably will agree that we have enough to manage in our lives. We don't need to manage anything else, right? And let alone stress. So I started to really listen to my language as I coached my patients and my clients in my Magic Menopause community and Girlfriend Doctor Club community, and listening to their way they talk about themselves and correcting them to focus on the positive. I mean, language is power, right? Language is power. The words we use towards others and ourselves are very, very powerful. So I started coaching and correcting encouraging clients to really rephrase things in a positive manner. And so then I was listening to myself talk to a patient about stress management, and I could see my physiology and I could see her physiology. And we're like, we're feeling stressed, right? Just talking about this. So let's back up. The antidote to stress is oxytocin, right? It's love, it's connection, it's hope, it's joy, it's laughter, it's fun, it's dance, it's music, it's playing, it's pets. I mean, it's my horses. I mean, it's all my kids most days once they were through teenage years. And so all these things, right? Like all these things. So I just started prescribing a joy prescription, a oxy play, I call it. Like, what do you do for fun? What brings you pleasure? How do you play? What makes you smile? And so basically I prescribed what I call oxy play. Okay, let's increase oxytocin throughout the day. And by these little habits, mindset shifts, you find yourself thinking negatively about something. How can you focus on what you're grateful for and the positive things that are in you and around you? And so it was really pronounced because of this one client who was a young mom. She was in her 39 years old. She had two toddlers at home and was anxious all the time, disorganized. You know, even when she came into her office visit, she'd have her mom on her cell phone so her mom can remind her and take notes about what we talk about in our visits. And so I told her, I said, you know, one day I'm like, after seeing her three or four times, like, what are you doing for fun? What did you do as a kid that you really enjoyed? And she goes, you know, I love to dance. I just love to dance. I said, well, is there a way you can start that? Maybe when your kids are at school? She goes, there is a dance place near her house on her way home from dropping the kids off to school. She's been looking at it and thinking, gosh, I wish I could do that. So we'll give it a try, you know, give it a try. And when I saw her in her follow-up visit, it was about 4 to 6 weeks later, she just came in, no cell phone on her, just it was tucked away in her purse. She was like, oh my God, I just feel so much better. And I'm more organized and I have no anxiety whatsoever. I said, what are you doing differently? She goes, I'm taking dance lessons twice a week. I'm having a blast. That was it. All the medications, all the things, the supplements, all the, you know, she just had to get back into feeling what fun feels like for her. And that's oxytocin. I'm telling you, it is alkalinizing. It is healing. It is powerful and it's free. Now we can prescribe it, but for the most part, it is 100% free.
Yeah. Of course it is. Oh, wow. This is such a great story and so much hope. Because Monica has been talking a lot about this since she heard you. And it's just by hearing you talk about it, it makes me feel more happy just talking about the way you can do this. And I love that you do that to your patients. But other than that, I guess, because you have now, you do the functional medicine thing, and I think maybe someone needs more than dancing in the in their life. Totally. So how do you work with women on the other side of this?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And as part of it, right? Often we start with, okay, where are the smallest changes that I can make to make the biggest difference? And so all my clients, you know, have to read my book, The Hormone Fix, and or do my Magic Menopause 8-week program. They have to do this because this is foundational. Mm-hmm. There, think about a bicycle and all the spokes of the wheel of the bicycle. There are many things that are helping the bicycle wheel go around smoothly and regularly. Well, when it comes to our health, it's the same thing. It's never just one thing. We have to look at all the spokes on the wheel. And so from hormone disruptors, from inflammatory foods, from, look, Annika has highlighted.
Your book is full of notes. I just wanted to make a point out of it because it's such a great book and I've read it twice. So it's like a little Bible for me to work through. But so there's many suggestions in this book.
Yes, there's so much there. And it's great for your, you know, if you have a male partner, it's great for him to read too. It's so important for him to read. So many times guys have come to me with tears in their eyes saying, thank you. It helped me help her and or help me understand. And it's so important. Plus they get healthier just through understanding what's going on. But there's so many pieces to this. So first and foremost, it is, you know, nutrition and lifestyle first, along with mindset. And so it is focusing on intermittent fasting, whole foods, right? If you can pick it, peel it, fish it, hunt it, milk it, grow it, then for the most part, you can eat it. But we don't do dairy. So my meal plans are keto green in a healthy way to get us into ketosis periodically. But there's that time where we carb up as well. But the alkalinizers, the greens, the sprouts, the mineral-rich foods, the organic whole foods and free-range meats and seafood, things like that that are clean, but it is grain-free and dairy-free because there's so much that creates inflammation in our body. By cutting this out, I can give clients a whole, like they start feeling better within, you know, certainly 7 to 10 days, their symptoms are 50 to 80% improved just by following the nutrition plan. Now we add in the lifestyle, start a good night's sleep starts with a good morning routine, right? It doesn't start with jumping out of bed, drinking a cup of black coffee, you know, looking at your phone. I mean, that is destructive start to your day. So we can think of things, okay, how I start my day, the shift in my physiology that I start my day with gratitude practice, with getting outside and getting early morning sunlight in my eyes and grounding with, you know, enjoying myself. And I'll have a hot glass or cold glass of Mighty Maca first thing in the morning to hydrate. That starts my day in a different physiology than what I used to do for so many years as an OBGYN.
So the Mighty Maca, just to explain that, because I used that, but I bought it in Spain, but I think you can get it in the UK because you have, So can you explain what that is? Instead of using coffee, I mean, we were talking about choosing cortisol or choosing oxytocin. I would suggest the Maca version for the morning routine.
Yeah, definitely. I always will drink maca before I have my cup of coffee. I am a coffee lover too, but I want to feel like I want to alkalinize and detox, and then I'll have my, you know, I'll break fast and have a cup of coffee. So it's a hard habit to switch to, especially when you're used to running on caffeine, but it makes a difference. And my formulation of Mighty Maca is a combination of 30 superfoods that I experienced and studied while I traveled around the world during that healing year that helped me with fertility. And it's since helped so many clients with hot flashes, it's safe in patients with celiac disease, with immune function disorders, with breast cancer. I see a lot of clients, like the most difficult clients, Mighty Maca Plus is foundational. Even my granddaughter's been drinking it since she was, before she turned 2 years old. I mean, I source the ingredients very clean And I've been using it in my patients and practice since 2009 and never expected it to be a thing, but now it's recommended by physicians around the world.
Why don't we talk a little bit about the alkaline keto style also, just to understand how you think about nutrition.
Yeah. So when we're talking about alkalinity, I'm talking about urine pH. And this is so important to understand. There's so many aspects of this that are so important. And the first is that, you know, if we think just from stress physiology, cortisol increases hydrogen ion secretion across the renal tubules of the kidneys, creating an acidic urine pH, because pH is a measure of power of hydrogen. So the more hydrogen ions, the more acidic the urine is. And the balance is when we have more alkaline urine, that is safer. 7 is neutral. Less than 7 is acidic, like the stomach pH is a pH of 1.5 to 3. And the vagina is typically a 3.5 to 4.5 pH, which makes sense. You want that acidity there to be a barrier to parasites, bacteria, fungi, and everything, right? So you want that good, healthy vaginal pH to be acidic. Skin has a slightly acidic pH. And then, you know, ideally, the pH will shift in our urine and our fluids in different ways. But the bladder pH, it has been studied that a healthier, higher, more alkaline bladder pH, so like 7, 7.5, 8, is associated with less cardiometabolic disease, also less inflammation. And what I found through, like, you know, you can be eating everything right. We know what we need to eat, right? Whole foods, pick a peel of fish and honey, milk it, grow it. You can eat it, you know, organic, no preservatives, stay away from all these chemicals and words you can't pronounce. Like that, we get that, you know, periodically, intermittent fast, do clean up your diet occasionally. Do longer fast. I mean, this is all part of healing our body. But when we're eating that really good green diet and the urine pH is still acidic, that's because cortisol's winning and oxytocin's losing. When we do increasing, like have a good night of sex and or have fun with our friends out and partying in the evening, you wake up alkaline. When you, you know, have a great time in a dance class or whatever, and you wait, you know, that shifts your urine to more alkaline. Oxytocin is more alkalinizing. It's absolutely more alkalinizing. Think about amniotic fluid where a baby is living in our womb surrounded by this amniotic fluid. It's really alkaline. If it's acidic, if it's not, if it doesn't change the pH paper dark blue, I know there's a sick baby in there, right? And this is the alkalinity of life. Think of a forest, think of the woodlands, think of being out in nature versus being in New York City or London smog, right? Those are acidity versus alkalinity. And I want to tell you how important this is. Why I have my clients check urine pH is because I'm a gynecologist. And you know, urinary incontinence, urinary tract infections, urgency symptoms lead people into a negative, unhealthy aging cycle. Unhealthy aging cycle. Today, still, anticholinergics are prescribed for women with those bladder urgency symptoms, that thought like, oh my God, I got to get to the bathroom. I don't know if I'm going to make it there in time. They're given these anticholinergics, which we know increase dementia and Alzheimer's. Like, this is, we can't do that. And we can't do that to a bladder. And so it is a sign, another vital sign. I say it's as important as your pulse and your blood pressure. Your bladder pH is critically important, not just to show you how is your physiology. Is it in a healthy state or a stressed state? And now there are times when it can be acidic, like after a good hard workout, sweating in the sauna, all those good things. You're going to shift to, a more of acidic space. So nutrition and stress, right? But if you are, you know, eating everything right, trying to live and high quality longevity, you're biohacking and you still have stress physiology, you still have fear, anger, dislike, mistrust, envy, you know, shame, guilt, you're holding those emotions. You know, that's shifting you into the catabolic state. I mean, test me on this. Check your urine pH when you're happy. check your urine pH when you're pissed off. Like that is, it is so true. It is so true. And protect our bladders as women and men. We really have to protect our bladders. So
that this is new to me. So I have never checked my bladder.
We're going to have to get you doing that.
I absolutely will do that.
I started last year after reading the book first time. So
yeah. And how was yours?
Now it's good, but I had to work a little bit and eat more alkaline food. So yeah. I used some of the recipes and also the maca, the mighty maca is good. General strategies would be like lemon water. You probably have some suggestions from your book too.
Yeah, definitely. A little bit of lemon in water, but minerals, bone broth. And this is something I also studied through my own journey and studying other cultures. As you think about the Inuits in Alaska, they're like, oh, well, they're eating the keto, you know, movement was like, well, look at all these Alaskans. They're eating all this high fat. They're, you know, in ketosis and their cardiovascular system's great, right? But they're not just doing that. They're drinking fish bone broth, right? They're drinking during those months, they're getting the minerals from the bones as they brew them. So those are the mineralization that's so important. However we get it, depending on where in the world we live, it's so critically important. So that adding minerals, adding, you know, electrolytes, adding minerals to your diet, really taking your time to, you know, bless your food before you eat it. Chew really, really well. Those are, you know, lots of greens, sprouts, alkalinizers, all of those things are really very, very beneficial to help support our physiology. And I do want to say this because this is the missing frontier when it comes to women's health in general. I'm just so passionate about it because I'm seeing women's lives change. Because, you know, I've been a longtime advocate in you know, for topical DHEA, vaginally and vulvar. I created a product in 2016 called Jolva, but I've been compounding hormones for a decade prior more on, you know, for vulvar, vaginal, and bladder health. And so that's really important. Topical hormone therapy, you can be managed on hormone therapy, but addressing, say, the vulvar area, clitoris to anus, keeping that tissue healthy works amazing. And now the missing piece has been the targeted probiotics for the vagina and bladder. And what I found recently in a study that was published in 2020 out of Harvard looked at what's called the urobiome. And the same bacteria, the same lactobacilli species that are predominant in the vagina in a healthy woman are predominant within the urethra and the bladder of a healthy woman. When that is disrupted, she gets more incontinence and urgency symptoms. Right? So boom. And if we can use all the hormones that we want, but unless we repopulate those strains of lactobacilli, we're not going to get the results we need. And because I've been doing this for so long and my product Jolva, I have tens of thousands, 50,000 people maybe using Jolva, and we're adding the probiotic and vaginally targeted probiotic because I've been able to test over the past few years for these strains because we could only test before as gynecologists for the STDs, right? The gonorrhea, the chlamydia, the trichomonas, et cetera. That's what we looked at under a microscope. And then we have labs that look at the disease factors, but now we can actually look at the healthy strains. And as I started a few years ago, being able to do this, I would see women, even reproductive age women, with none of the healthy strains. None, because antibiotics, douching, you know, lubricants, different things, you know, but chronic antibiotic use, foods that have been, you know, I think of, you know, chicken from the local drive-through chicken place. You're getting a dose of antibiotics if you're not eating organic foods that haven't been treated with antibiotics. So this has affected women's vaginal flora and the bladder flora. And so as I started testing and seeing none, and I tested myself, and I mean, it's been probably a decade since I've had antibiotics, but I had a very small amount of the healthy strains. I started receding that, like taking an oral and or vaginal probiotic with the important lactobacilli strains. And it changed. And I hear from patients, oh my God, I feel even better down there. Things are just working better. I'm not getting up at night to pee. I'm like, oh my God, okay, that was the missing piece. You know, the more we know about the gut microbiome for longevity, that's key. The missing frontier has been vaginal health. Vaginal, vulvar health, bladder health, the vaginal microbiome. That is the missing longevity factor.
So that's wonderful. And the Juva, I have that cream myself. But I was just learning here now in Spain, because we are doing hormones at compounded pharmacies. You can make them here with the doctor. Anyways, the content, it lasts only for 3 months when you open a box. Is that true with your products too, that they tear off?
We have stability test for Jolva for 2.5 years. So, but when you if you're not, it. Yes. Yeah. Well, definitely 12 months once it's opened, but you know, you're going to reseal it. So, yeah. So we have shelf life stability for 2.5 years. Let me correct that. Once it's opened, I believe it's 12 months with Jolva, but you know, it only works if you're using it regularly. So
can you share the content in Jolva? Some of
yeah,
the ingredients?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I compounded it with like when I had burnout from my medical practice back in 2015, my patients were all like, Dr. Anna, no one will give us your creams, lotions, and potions for sexual health, for bladder health, for incontinence, for all that good stuff. So I said I would come up with something over the counter that you don't need a prescription for, that's even better than anything I could write on a prescription pad. And so I used DHEA, which is over the counter here in the US. So DHEA with the Alpine rose plant stem cells that have been extensively studied for improving collagen, you know, improving, you know, it's in high-end skin creams and cosmetic creams. And it just has such beautiful science behind these stem cells of this Alpine rose that grows in the Swiss Alps among the harsh conditions of ice, snow, rocky terrain. And I think if there's anything that beautifully describes women post midlife, it is these Alpine rose, and they are just powerful stem cells. So I use a concentration of the Alpine rose and then emu oil, and to help the ingredients drive deep into the tissue. And those are the key ingredients to Jolva. And it's, again, safe for oral sex, safe for a male partner. You know, you don't have to worry like you do with estrogen that he's going to get some. It's fine. He can use Jolva too. So it's perfectly safe and very beneficial. And I say, you know, clitoris to anus to keep that tissue healthy. And because the glands at the opening to the vagina, those are hormonally dependent. So applying this in that area really helps your body's natural moisture and natural vaginal pH decrease. So we see that protective and hormone stabilizing effect. So
wonderful. Could we talk also a little bit about hormone replacement therapy and your take on that and how you combined, for instance, Jolva or other products?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, when a woman is menopausal or postmenopausal, there's cyclical hormones often in the perimenopausal that we use, but I always look at how our hormones are changing as we age. So if we look at just the reproductive hormones that are changing as we age, DHEA, which we can measure in our DHEA sulfate in our blood or DHEA in our saliva, we can measure this. It peaks in our 20s and starts to decline for both men and women. And then progesterone starts to decline. It's estimated by 75% between age 35 and 50. That's a huge drop. We're going to feel that. Our body's going to sense that. The irregular menstrual cycles, the heavier than normal, the more PMS, the more mood swings, difficulty sleeping. All of this because progesterone is a endocrine hormone, but it's also a neurologic hormone, right? It has neurotransmitter functions. It is brain protective. It is calming. And so you get this decline in progesterone, of course you're going to feel something. So we have to keep raising the threshold and through you know, honoring our body's monthly cycles as well as our daily circadian rhythm. And then estrogen between age 35 and 50 declines by 35%. So, you know, compared to 75% of progesterone. So we start to see this decline, and testosterone is a slow and steady decline. And it, you know, when we think about these, you know, these hormones and these changes, they're declining while cortisol is increasing and insulin is, we're becoming more insulin resistant as we age. So that's why this, like I call the keto alkaline or keto green lifestyle, is so important, because getting into ketosis, at least periodically, you know, maybe it's just a couple days a week for you at this point. Like I'm 60 now, so I'm like, oh, you know, a lot less than I used to. But in my 40s, it was essential to have brain function, to have mood, to have healthy, healthy mindset. So all good things. So now in my 60s, I'm like, not as strict as I used to be. But with that said, continuing periodic intermittent fasting. So bumping into ketosis, because that's creating insulin sensitivity. And that will help all our hormones behave better. Focusing on alkalinity over acidity. So that's managing more oxytocin, you know, addressing the stress response. Those are really, and no more snacking. So those are really key nutritional and lifestyle habits to help. And then the adrenals, the adaptogens. For me, everyone starts on Mighty Maca Plus because it detoxes, it supports the adrenals. It's, you know, it's, for me, it's my healing journey in a can. So it's something that I use for my clients. And then I'll add progesterone and support the adrenals additionally if I need to. For women, small doses of DHEA can be helpful. I get acne if I take any oral DHEA. So for me, it's using Jolva. But for women who, like, I've had women come in on 50 milligrams of DHEA, y'all, and that's a lot. I say, you know, 5 milligrams to 15 milligrams for women. If they need more, it's because we're not doing this other stuff, right? We're not getting them to sleep. We're not addressing their oxytocin. We're not addressing their stress, right? So if they're requiring more, something else is going on with the adrenals, and we need to figure that out. Toxic exposure, mold, other things that could be affecting the adrenals. And then testosterone and or estrogen. So those kind of, like, that order over 30 years of practice, and only bioidentical. And progesterone, I do have clients take a break in progesterone, even well menopausally. So, you know, it typically 3 to 5 days off per month. Some colleagues that I have recommend, higher, longer periods of cycling, so you have a period well postmenopausally. I do not fall into that camp with my patients unless I have someone who really wants to, but I can think of maybe one patient I've had. I want to help clients with their hormones, and, you know, I say it's hormone replenishment or hormone restoration versus hormone replacement. I don't want to suppress your body's natural ability to make and produce your hormones, because we know when we get into these higher doses, that's what's happening. We see it with men all the time. They're on testosterone and their testes shrink. They stop testosterone, they're depressed and suicidal. So you can't do that. And we shouldn't be doing that as physicians to a body.
But what would be the benefits of pausing, for instance, progesterone?
The only one I typically pause on a regular, 3 to 5 months, is to reset the receptor sites. Progesterone is one of our mother hormones, right? Yes. From cholesterol, we're making progesterone and pregnenolone. And then we, you know, further metabolize to DHEA, then to testosterone, then estrogen. And we aromatize estrogen from other sources. But so we have that kind of downstream pathway. So logically, it's to keep it working, because how many people have you known that they've been on it, now they're on a higher dose, and now they don't feel as good, or, you know, like, just keep it, you know, to suffer for 3 to 5 days if you're, you know, you maybe or not, but, like, it will keep working for us in the long term this way.
It sounds logical. So that would be like 3 to 4 or 5 days in a row, just a break every month.
If you can tolerate it in a row, yes.
Yeah. And would you suggest orally or vaginally or both?
I think it's great to to test and see works best for you. And you can mix it up. Until we have, okay, this is the only way you have to do something. And I've learned from so many patients, there's not one way. You know, some do well on cream, some do well on troches, some do well on patches, some do, you know, and vaginal vulvar is a great access route, right? Vaginal hormones are great access route. So using progesterone now, things that I like to look at are with my patients when I'm prescribing higher levels of hormones, it's a vaginal ultrasound, looking at the uterus and the ovaries if they still have it. And, you know, looking at that endometrial lining, because that gives me an idea. And also when we're using creams or hormones transdermally, we're not seeing it in the blood. So we need to look at other ways of assessing hormone concentrations and physiology. And that's with urinary metabolite testing and also looking at LH and FSH well into the menopause, because that's a good marker of bone health and brain health and hormone responsiveness.
I see. So the combination and also, of course, symptoms, you would look at the clinical. Yeah.
Completely. Like I always say, you know, test, don't guess, but treat the patient, not the labs.
In Norway, I just wonder about the estrogen. We use estradiol, but how about estriol? Do you use that too in the States? Because that will be probably a little bit better for us.
Well, I think that estriol is a beautiful estrogen, right? It's one of the weaker estrogens, but it was studied for immune support. It's a dominant estrogen in pregnancy, so it has benefit. There was research that I read way back in early 2000s that was done on clients with multiple sclerosis, and they were put on 8 milligrams of estriol and had an improvement in all symptoms. And from that point, really, in the bioidentical world, we were looking at E2, E3, even E1 in topical, transdermal, and or oral formulations. I've gone into the camp that if I'm prescribing and compounding a cream, I'm going to use E2 and E3, so estradiol and estriol. And because you're using a skin cream, like you can use it periodically on your face, your neck, other parts of your body, and you get that beneficial skin effects, but you're also absorbing it into your system. And, you know, we start because there's prescription estradiol that's covered by insurance, you know, patches, pills, gels, et cetera, that, you know, so a lot of times, like there is a bias in the States that we only want what our insurance company will cover. And so that's that focus on estradiol, right? There's that focus on estradiol, and that's where most of the research is.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, that's physicians lean that way. Now I use a combination of things.
That's great. I like that too, because in Spain you can get that. But I will try it on my skin. What would be, can you feel it? Would you use it under your eyes or the thinner parts?
You have the Jolva. Use this under your eyes, because Jolva works to support the glands around the vulvar vaginal area to help your body naturally produce more. Use and I had an ophthalmologist out in New York and interviewed her, and she was using the DHEA under eye cream and, you know, to help with dryness, because it helps like glandular secretion. There's good, interesting preliminary research on that. Anyway, my whole community is using it under their eyes now too. So a little bit under their eyes here. You can do lower and upper eyelids.
Really?
It is game changing. So, you know, there's a little pearl.
So we don't need eye cream anymore. We can use this instead, because I've seen the trend with the estrogen creams, but we cannot get those in Norway.
But we can order from UK. We're gonna empty the stock in UK.
Yeah.
But this is so wonderful to hear you inspiring us and teach us how to live better. That's what we want. We want quality of life. We want more oxytocin, less stress, or more focus on the good things.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. There's little things we can do that are going to make big difference. And I'm all about like the cellular changes that we can make that are going to have the biggest results, right? But how was I trained? I was trained, if you have a headache, you know, you treat the headache. If you have a, you know, if you have a stomach ache, you treat the stomach ache. You don't look at the whole body, and you can't separate head from body. You can't separate our body. Fascia runs through us. It's essentially its own circulatory system, if you really want to think about it that way. So, you know, we have to do things that, like, again, at the cellular level, that's going to make the most improvement, and everything gets better. And really, and I love that. I love that piece. It's a lot simpler and easier to remember. Let's do these 90% of things first, and then we'll add the, you know, those other hacks.
Thank you so much for your time. We truly appreciate you and all you share with us and all your books. We're going to make sure to put all the links in the show notes.
Thank you. Thank you. This has been fun. I seriously want to come. So just tell me, what are some of the things that you do and you've really witnessed and leaned into being from Norway? What do you think has made your perspective different?
Well, that's special for us in Norway. I don't know. We look to the States for most of our answers, and people like you, actually. We don't have that many in Norway, even though we see doctors turning around and looking at the root causes and questioning things. We still have a long way to go. So we look abroad, and Monica learns a lot in Spain. They are far ahead. Norway is way back. Yeah.
It's really conservative in Norway still. And we even see that a lot of doctors think like the Women Health Initiative, they think about synthetic hormones. They are not updated. So that's why the podcasts are so important also for the doctors in Norway. But I mean, we have the nature, we have clean water. Well, we have American visitors to come to Norway. They feel fresh and drained and shredded, they say, because everything is so clean. So at least we have the surroundings, like a biohacker.
Yes.
That's something.
Yes. Absolutely. That makes a difference.
It's also kind of an easy living here. We have the social system to take care of us. And so it's kind of easier,
safe.
Maybe.
Yeah. Safe. Yeah, it is. We may make sure we have to invite you to come and do a lecture in Norway.
Yeah.
I would love to. Yes. Are your parents alive still?
Yes. My dad,
parents are.
Yeah.
So they're in their 80s.
Ah, nice.
That's good health.
Good health, yes.
Yeah.
And that's key. That's like, those are the, like, I want to talk to them, you know, like that. So my dad lived to 91, but at 79, his doctors had given up on him. And so I had to step in. Oh. My mom, she died at 67. So much of what I know, and I was a resident at Emory at the time. So much of what I know, it's because I witnessed, like our family is my mom's side is Palestinian origin. So those, like her, you know, from seven brothers and sisters, nine brothers and sisters, the four that were still living when she came to the U.S. still outlived all the U.S., all the ones that came to the U.S. Three came to the U.S., my mom and her two younger brothers, and one of her sisters, her older sister, stayed in the Middle East, and again, war-torn areas between Beirut and Palestine, and they all outlived the American ones, the ones that came to America. So it made me think, like, just to witness, what did we do wrong? Yes. Polypharma, you know, the chemicals, air, the isolation, right? Yeah. And you think of all these pieces because you're in a war-torn area, you're, you know, like it's traumatizing. How do you have longer life? And they, you know, her younger sister lived into her 90s. So yeah. And her older sister lived to almost 90. So outlived her by over 20 years.
Wow. That's a lot, really, when you're in a war zone and still, I mean, the climate, I don't know, when you have each other's back to the blue zones, when you have somebody you can lean on, I think so.
Yeah.
But you probably brought the heritage at least with you, so you have it in the power of being you.
Know what to do.
Yes, you know what to do.
Yes, the oxytocin increasing practices.
Yes,
yeah. Big parties, invite everyone, have fun.
That must come from Beirut, no?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Well, we appreciate the time you have spent with us, and best of luck with all your travels now. You're going to have so much work to do with lectures, and we understand you are busy.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to talking with you and seeing you guys again sometime, hopefully in person.
Yes. Thank you. Great. Thanks a lot.
Vi minner om at dere må snakke med egen lege eller kostholdsveileder om dietter og andre spørsmål relatert til medisiner og supplementer. Informasjon med dele kan ikke bli brukt til å diagnostisere, behandle, forebygge eller kurere noen sykdommer eller tilstander.